right, Wednesday night Bible students. Scripture text for tonight, Numbers chapter 16, verses 24 through 50. We only got as far as verse 23 last week. Just a lot of information in this chapter, a lot of things to talk about and consider and learn from, and good reason to slow down in our study. After all, this is a big story. A Kohathite by the name of Korah had his eyes on Aaron's ministry position and his ministry posterity, that is the future of all ministry. But one man, Korah, against Moses, well, that's not really much of a challenge. So he didn't keep it as one-on-one or one-on-two, Korah against Moses or Korah against Moses and Aaron. He cunningly recruited some buddies, and that would be Dathan, Abiram, and a guy named On. Personally, that's my favorite of the group. And now you have four men against two. These four men against Moses and Aaron, still not a fair fight. I still give the edge to Moses and Aaron, but of course they understood that to take on two men like Moses and Aaron, you're going to need an army of men, and that's exactly what they do. They recruit and influence 250 other leaders within the nation. These would become rebel elders among the nation. We'll call them rebel elders of the nation. 250 of them, can you imagine, talking 250 men into trying to take on Moses and Aaron and overthrow them. So now you have 254 men coming after Aaron with Moses in the way. But as Moses notified them in verse 11, it wasn't just Moses in their way. It wasn't just Moses standing between the people and Aaron's position. But as Moses says there in verse 11, what they were really doing was picking a fight with the Lord. Now, is that really the best way for us to spend our energy? Picking fights against the Lord. It sounds ridiculous when we say it, and we read that beginning of that story, and we know going into it who's going to win. It's foolish. And yet, so many Christians do the very same thing to the Lord. Oh, it's maybe not as outright and full frontal as we see here, but certainly we rebel against the Lord. We resist him. We fight him. So that's part of the kind of things that we're looking at in this study and hopefully learning from. I hope we're not struggling with these basic things, but anytime you're resisting the Lord, you should think back to this story. This is what you're doing. You're picking a fight with someone you have no business picking a fight with. These guys thought, yeah, this is a good use of our energy. We can do this. 254 men, just two guys, Moses and Aaron. What really can the Lord do to help them out? And as we hit verse 24, we are all set up for this big showdown. We've seen a little bit of it up to verse 23 thus far. I would say one of the biggest showdowns recorded in the Bible. What would be the biggest one? Oh, come on, ask Calvary. There are a lot of good showdowns in the scripture. This is a good one. This is a big one. And Moses, no doubt led of the Lord, sets this showdown up. He gives everyone a censer. So Korah gets his censer. Dathan and Abiram, they are offered censers, but they refuse. They say, we're not going to show up. We don't want any part of this. Now, On, he doesn't seem to get a censer. We don't know what happened to On after verse 1. He disappears, so perhaps On was rebellious, but then he was able to turn it off. I don't know. That's possible. But he disappears. We don't know what happened to him. He's not included in the judgment here. So whatever On did, whatever his decision was, seems like a good one for his part. The 250 rebellious elders, the rebelders, they get their censers, and they all get out there and throw coals of fire on their censers. They sprinkle incense on their censers, on those coals, and now it's just a matter of seeing who the Lord would pick, who the Lord would confirm as the priest and the line of priests that he would choose. So just keep in mind, you have 254 people that are directly disobedient to the commands that the Lord gave in Exodus 30, which would be no one but Aaron is to light the incense on the altar of incense. And there they are out there with their censers burning incense away, wondering what's going to happen when we all know full well what was going to happen. And we did get started into that last week. That the Lord confirmed his picks to be Moses and Aaron. What else would you expect? You expect the Lord to say, you know, I did have a law against this, but man, I really like you guys' style. I really like how you offered incense, so you know what? Scrap that law. How about you come on board and work for us at the tabernacle as priests? Let's talk hourly wage and vacation time. Let's get this deal done. Of course that wasn't going to happen. We knew that the Lord was going to stick with the laws that he had already gave them in Exodus chapter 30. And he confirmed, no matter what you want, no matter what you think, no matter what seems best to you as far as leadership is concerned, it all boils down to this. I'm the Lord, you're not. I picked Moses to be the pastor, to be the leader of the nation, and I picked Aaron to be my high priest. So verse 21, separate yourselves from the congregation. This is the Lord's response. Separate yourself from the congregation that I may consume them in a moment. That's the Lord's initial response. Let's just burn this whole thing up. Let's just scrap the whole thing. Moses and Aaron, you'll live. Everyone else, they are toast. Until what happened? Moses and Aaron begin to intercede for the nation. And that's something I don't think any of us would probably be all that eager to do. I think I told you last week, my response would probably be to get popcorn and soda and watch the show. Light them up, Lord. Make this good. I'm ready. These people that came up against me, how dare they? Get them, Lord. Sick them. But Moses and Aaron, beautiful hearts before the Lord, they intercede for the people, for everyone but Korah, the main instigator. And that brings us to verse 24 tonight, where we get to see how the Lord responded to the attempts of intercession by Moses and Aaron. And I'll read verse 23 along with this, and we'll get going here. Verse 23, and the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, verse 24, say to the congregation, get away from the dwelling of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. Okay, that's very bad news for Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. And verse 35 is going to be really bad news for the 250 rebelders. But for everyone else, for the rest of the congregation of Israel, verse 23, verse 24, major sigh of relief, because that means the Lord has given regard, at least partially, to the attempts of intercession by Moses and Aaron. God was threatening to exterminate the whole nation, and he let Moses and Aaron, quote unquote, talk him out of doing it. And you understand by now what's really happening there. This is not, you know, again, this is like the third or fourth time I've said this, but I just don't want to pass it up without saying it, so that no one misunderstands what's actually happening. This is not God being hot-tempered and Moses being the cool, collected one and talking the Lord down. That's not really what's happening. This is all set up by the Lord. The Lord at no point intended on frying, nuking the whole nation. Of course not. But the Lord makes that threat so that he gets to show us both sides of his perfect justice. He makes that threat to show us what the nation did deserve. Punishment for their sins, for their rebellion. Here's what the nation deserves. But in that setup, it was the Lord working through the hearts of Aaron and Moses, working intercession within their hearts in order to display to us his mercy and grace. We get the same thing. That's a type for us. For the New Testament, we get to the New Testament, we find all of that in Christ. We should have, by reading stories like this, a really good understanding of just how horrible our sin is. And we should have a really good grasp on what it is that we actually deserve from the Lord. But then in the person of Jesus the Messiah, we get to see not what we know, which is the wrath of God that we deserve, but we get to see in Jesus the mercy and the grace of Christ that he offers us through his Son, our intercessor, Jesus. As for Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, step away from the tent. Don't go anywhere near that tent. You don't want to be anywhere close when the Lord sends his judgment. So vacate ground zero immediately. It's about to go down. Verse 25. Then Moses rose and went to Dathan and Abiram, and the elders of Israel followed him. That would be the 250 rebellious elders of the nation of Israel. So pay very close attention to what we read in verse 25. Make sure you understand what verse 25 is saying. Moses was with Korah and the 250 rebellious elders. Verses 12 through 14, which we covered last week, told us that Dathan and Abiram would not show up for this showdown. They wanted nothing to do with it, but they are still, of course, stewing over their rebellion in their tents. They didn't want to be a part of the public rebellion, but there's still rebellion in their hearts. And we read about just how deep that rebellion was in verses 13 and 14. They say things like this: Moses, you ripped us out of our paradise there in Egypt. We loved our slavery. It was wonderful there. That was truly the land flowing with milk and honey. You ripped us out of there. You made us a promise about a land flowing with milk and honey, and you haven't delivered on it. You brought us out here to die in the desert. You are lording it over us with your self-assumed authority, and we don't like that one bit. Besides that, you talk funny and your mom dresses you funny. You know, whatever. They were just attacking Moses, really going after him. And it couldn't be more evident to us that these guys have a problem. These guys are a problem. And these guys were going to continue to be a problem if the Lord didn't snuff this problem out. And if we can figure that out just by reading this, how much more so the Lord, who knew their hearts, who knew what was stirring inside those tents, and knew that even though they didn't show up for the public showdown, that still in their hearts, they were filled with rebelliousness, filled with wickedness. This was a problem for ages to come. They would be perpetually thorns in the sides of the nation if the Lord let them live to fight another day. And it's something the Lord just couldn't do. So Moses, they won't come to us. So Moses, you go to them. They're not getting off the hook. I tell you, nothing gets past the Lord. And I love that. I'm really just so blessed to know that. That, Lord, I don't have to stress over, you know, does everyone get what they deserve in this life? When people wrong me, I don't have to worry about, well, Lord, did you get them? Did they pay for what they said about me? I don't even have to worry about that. I can just mind my own business, serve the Lord, pay attention to the things that concern me, and I can let the Lord deal with everyone else, knowing that his judgment is going to be spot on in the end. Verse 26, and he spoke to the congregation. So Moses is now warning the entire congregation, saying, depart, please, from the tents of these wicked men and touch nothing of theirs, lest you be swept away with all their sins. Get as far away from people like this as you can. Don't even hang out in their tents. Don't even go to their homes. Because if you start listening to what people like this are saying, you could end up getting caught up in it. And if you start just sweeping away what they say, you know, well, I'm sure they're just blowing off some steam. No big deal. They're attacking our leaders in the church, but no big deal. And you just start sweeping things under the rug. Be careful, because that's the kind of thing that can end up getting you swept away with them. Romans chapter 16, verse 17. The apostle Paul says, I beseech you, brothers, I appeal to you, brothers, to watch out for those who cause divisions and create obstacles contrary to the doctrine that you have been taught. avoid them. Because it can happen so imperceptibly. It starts with conversation. And then it turns to acknowledgments. Have you ever noticed this about our church leader? How he does whatever, fill in the blanks. And an acknowledgement can quickly turn into an assumption. Yeah, I have noticed that our leader does that. I bet you he does that or she does that because of fill in the blanks. And now you have an acknowledgement that becomes an assumption. And if you're not careful, that can become an accusation. And if you're not careful at that stage, it can become an attempt at overthrow of authority. So you are best to just avoid those tents altogether. We talked recently, I think a few weeks ago, I kind of mentioned in passing and then left you hanging about shunning. Well, here's a good example of when it's appropriate to do some good old New Testament shunning. Paul says, when you find people like that in the church, that they're regularly, consistently causing problems, creating divisions, creating obstacles for the fellowship, mark those people and avoid them, right? There you have it. Biblical New Testament call for shunning. Just stay out of the tents of those kind of people. Verse 27. So they got away from the dwelling of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. And Dathan and Abiram came out and stood at the door of their tents, together with their wives, their sons, which would be adult sons, and their little ones, which would be any children not yet of adult age. So when you see this phrase, little ones, in the scriptures, that basically covers from infancy all the way up to adulthood. Now, it could be, when it's speaking about this term in the Bible, referring to infants, but I can almost assure you, in this case, we're not dealing with infants here. My biblical guess is going to be that these are young teens, these are young people, but they are old enough to make some decisions, and I'll show you why I believe that when we get to verse 33. So hold on to that for just a second. But together with their wives, their sons, and their little ones, more than likely young teenagers, verse 28. And Moses said, hereby you shall know that the Lord has sent me to do all these works, and that it has not been of my own accord, verse 29. If these men, now if you're taking notes, you'd want to underline that word men. It is the Hebrew word ish. And ish in the scriptures can mean either men or mankind, or as we would say, people. And it definitely means people here, because this is going to go on to talk about the deaths of everyone, not just Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, but the deaths of everyone. This includes their families. So we're going to use the word people instead of men here. If these people die, as all people die, or if they are visited by the fate of all mankind, same word there, ish, same Hebrew word, this time the ESV translates it as mankind. If they are visited by the fate of all mankind, then the Lord has not sent me. In other words, if these people die at a ripe old age, comfortably in bed, if they do not meet a tragic, horrific end on this day, then I'm a fraud and don't listen to anything else that I'm saying. Verse 30, but if the Lord creates something new, something divine, something undeniable, and the ground opens its mouth and swallows them up with all that belongs to them, that would be their families, their tents, and everything that they own, and they go down alive into Sheol, the pit, hell, the place of the dead, then you shall know that these people have despised the Lord. Verse 31. And as soon as he had finished speaking all these words, the ground under them split apart. Verse 32. and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up with their households and all the people. Same Hebrew word, ish, not translated as men, but translated as people. And all the people who belonged to Korah and all their goods, verse 33, so they and all that belonged to them went down alive into Sheol, and the earth closed over them, and they perished from the midst of the assembly. Well, I think that would get the point across, don't you? Lord, who do you pick? Yep, we got it. Pretty clear statement. Very clearly, it wasn't Moses who picked Moses. It wasn't Moses who picked Aaron. It wasn't Aaron who picked Aaron. But it was the Lord demonstrably, and I mean demonstrably, confirming his selections. These were his men, and this was undeniably the Lord that was doing this. And it is why Moses and the Lord picked something like this, something impossible and unprecedented, so that when the people saw it, they wouldn't have an excuse to explain it away. If Moses and the Lord decided on something, let's say, not impossible, not very common, but improbable, then the people that are looking to explain things away, they're going to be able to do that. For example, Lord, if these people aren't bad people, then Lord, get them sick and let them die from the sickness. And if that happened, then those looking to explain it away, they would say, well, they got sick and they died. It happens. Unfortunate coincidence, but man, it happens. No, the Lord wanted to make sure that there was absolutely no possibility that they would see God's judgment and write it off as something else, continue to give Moses a hard time, continue to feel as though Moses and Aaron were just arbitrarily running things, and that they would know the Lord is behind this. This is the Lord's nation. These are the Lord's men. But are they still going to write off what the Lord did there? You'll find out at verse 40. You might be surprised. But first, a very necessary and important part of this study. Verses 32 and 33. Korah, Dathan, Abiram, all of their families, the adults, the little ones, whatever that might mean, all of them swallowed up alive by the pit. So that means spouses, sons, daughters. So I have an important question to ask you. And that would be, did the Lord punish and kill innocent people in this judgment? Did the Lord punish and kill innocent people in this judgment? I wish I had time to ask each one of you separately and hear your answer, because I could tell you just by your answer how well you know the Lord and how well you don't. Would the Lord do this? Would the Lord kill innocent people? If you look up the word innocent in the Bible, you will read what seems to me to be hundreds, if not thousands, of situations scripturally where the Lord is very careful to instruct his people, now make sure that you acquit the innocents and condemn only the guilty. Here's a good reference to write down for this, Deuteronomy chapter 25, verse 1. That's almost word for word with what I just said. The Lord is very careful about that. Acquit the innocent, condemn only the guilty. And you can look up all of those references and see how the Lord feels when it comes to the punishment and the killing of innocent people. Or, to be honest, you don't even really need to go off into that whole study of things and look up 100 or 1,000 verses. Everything that you need to properly understand this and answer that question is found right here in this chapter. Did the Lord kill innocent people here? Did he kill helpless infants here? I think if you look at verse 30, this is going to answer it for you. It is tough to see if you're not studying carefully because of the choice of translation. And most of the newer translations are going to translate with the word mankind or people, but we are studying from a literal version of the Bible, so that version is not often going to try to interpret things for us, simply interpret them literally. But if you look at what happened in verse 30, here's what Moses said essentially. Moses said, if this happens, if the Lord kills these people by opening up the earth and swallowing them alive in the pit, then you shall know it is because these people despised the Lord. If this happens, if this judgment from God falls, Moses says, then you can know this for sure. They were guilty of despising the Lord. Now ask yourself that question again. Did the Lord kill helpless infants in this situation? I don't think you can answer yes to that question. I don't think there's any way that you could do that, because as far as I can tell, an infant can't despise the Lord. And that's the proof that the Lord gave to Moses through Moses. Can a young adult despise the Lord? Absolutely. You ever been around teenagers? Teenagers can despise the Lord. Adult sons and daughters can despise the Lord. Spouses can despise the Lord. Now, I do feel bad for these family members of these three guys, because I'll tell you what happened here. This guy, Korah, and his buddies, Dathan and Abiram, they were so set on their rebellion against the Lord. And what they did was they infected their families with that rebellion. And the spouses followed right along. If hubby said it, it must be true. Aaron must be taken down. And the adult sons and the daughters, they listened to dad. They believed dad. And same with the younger children. So this is an example of just how important it is that we as parents raise our children in the fear of the Lord. Teach them and train them in the way that they should go. It's why we should be so careful not to provoke our children to wrath. I just quoted that one to my dad not long ago. You know, I mean, you can expect it. We were working together for 2-3 days there trying to get Lyndon Allen moved. So inevitable that that verse is going to come up. Am I right? It's why it's so important that when we have any kind of leadership position, we understand that with that leadership, with that greater influence, comes the opportunity for greater condemnation. It's one thing for you to take yourself down with your rebellion. Man, it's a whole other thing when you take other people down with you in your rebellion. Woe to you if you offend the little ones. Woe to you. Be better for you if they strung you up with a millstone around your neck and cast you into the sea. So it's a very serious thing. That's probably what happened here. Family sticking together, all because these men at the top, heads of their homes, were corrupt in their hearts. And now entire families went down to the pit alive with them. Very unfortunate. So my tedious observation there is that no innocent people were harmed in the unfolding of this drama. I really, truly believe that. I don't believe the Lord killed one innocent person here. Verse 34, and all Israel who were around them fled at their cry, for they said, lest the earth swallow us up. Verse 35, and fire came out from the Lord and consumed the 250 men offering the incense. So to put it into base terms for you, you'll either consecrate yourself to the Lord through a vicarious burnt offering. That's what burnt offerings were for, right? You either consecrate yourself to the Lord through a vicarious burnt offering. Jason's smiling, he knows. Or you'll be the burnt offering yourself. You either get to hear a well done, good and faithful servant, or you will be a well-done, wicked rebel. You know, right off the grill, piping hot, well done. These 250 rebellious elders among the nation, it's exactly what we were just talking about. They weren't just taking themselves down. They were influencers. They had positions of influence and authority, and all the more the responsibility toward the Lord to make sure that the direction they're leading the nation is a good direction. I would remind you that the Apostle Paul said, don't be too quick to want to be a teacher, because with that comes the potential for greater condemnation. If you're understanding God's word incorrectly, that's not a good thing for you. But if you're leading other people in that, that's so far worse. Because you don't just answer to the Lord with the works that you do that negatively affect you. You answer to the Lord for the works that you do that negatively affect others as well. It's a very important issue. And besides all that, these are leaders. They were given God's law. Again, Exodus 30. I keep coming back to that. Everyone was fully informed here. It's not like they didn't know this. This was Aaron's position. This was his task. And the priest would come from his line and his line only. Exodus 30. There's no way around it. The nation knew it. And yet they still persisted in this rebellious effort. So can you blame Moses for that? Can you blame Aaron for that they didn't listen? No, they had the warnings. You can't blame the Lord for it, that's for sure. If you came over to my house and I said to you, hey, help yourself to whatever you want. Help yourself to the fridge, you know, whatever you want to drink. Help yourself to the cabinets, just whatever, enjoy. But under the sink, stay away from that. That's where we keep our chemicals, our cleaning chemicals. And then I, you know, promptly walk away to go to the bathroom or whatever. And you're sitting there thinking, huh, I feel like he's keeping something back from me. I'm loud in the fridge, huh, and the cabinets, but not this cabinet. Now, isn't that odd? And you open the cabinet and you find some Clorox bleach and you say to yourself, no, wait a minute, Clorox bleach, that's a cleaner. Wouldn't that be good to clean out my digestive system? Is Arlen trying to keep me from a good thing? Is he the only guy that's going to be clean? Well, I don't think so. And then I come back and catch you as you're swigging down that last gulp of 16 ounces of bleach. Here's what's going to happen. You're dead. The clock is ticking. You're dead. Are you going to be mad at me for that? I warned you. If you're an adult, I shouldn't have to tell you, hey, don't drink the chemicals under the sink. They're cleaners. I shouldn't have to warn you that. See Mr. Yuck on there? Yeah. If you're an adult, I shouldn't have to warn you, but I warned you. I told you. And you're going to die, but you did that to yourself. And it's very much the same situation with every one of these people in this chapter. In fact, everyone that you'll find during this 40 years of desert wandering that comes to meet a pretty severe judgment and end from the Lord, it's not like they didn't know in advance. No one accidentally did something and said, oh, I'm so sorry, Lord. And he said, that doesn't matter. It's a matter of principle. I gave my law, so you're dead. That's not how any of this happens. These are people that obstinately, stubbornly chose to persist in their rebellion. So none of these people can be upset with the Lord, not a one of them. Entirely informed, appropriately warned, and yet they still chose the way of death. Verse 36. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, verse 37, tell Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, to take up the censers out of the blaze, then scatter the fire far and wide, for they have become holy. The censers have become holy. Verse 38, as for the censers of these men who have sinned at the cost of their lives, let them be made into hammered plates as a covering for the altar, for they offered them before the Lord, and they became holy. Thus they shall be a sign to the people of Israel. Verse 39, so Eleazar the priest took the bronze censers, which those who were burned had offered, and they were hammered out as a covering for the altar, verse 40, to be a reminder to the people of Israel so that no outsider who is not of the descendants of Aaron should draw near to burn incense before the Lord, lest he become like Korah and his company, as the Lord said to him through Moses. So very interesting here. These censers, they were offered rebelliously, but they were offered nonetheless. And so the Lord says, because they were offered to me, they're now holy. We're not going to let that go to waste. We're going to put that to use. These censers that were offered up in rebellion, they were still offered up to me. So I'm not going to let that offering go to waste. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take that offering. I'm going to take all those censers, and I'm going to let that serve as a perpetual future reminder to the nation of Israel of why it is so important that you submit to God's established order of leadership and authority. So they melt these censers down and hammer them into basically what would be a lid for the brazen altar out there in front of the, right in front as you go inside the outer courtyard. So I would think this would be extremely effective, because if you were a commoner and you got the wild and crazy idea that you were going to offer up incense to the Lord, where's the first place you'd have to go? It'd be the brazen altar, because all incense that was burned, it had to be coals from the fire on the brazen altar. You had to get those coals from the brazen altar and then burn incense on those coals. So that would be your first stop, and just, you know, picture yourself, hey, I want to burn incense before the Lord. I just want to bless the Lord. And I'm not thinking about rules and laws. I just want to bless the Lord. I'm going to go burn some incense. Where do you go? You go to the brazen altar. But when you get there now, there's a big old bronze lid on the top of it. All of those censers melted down to form a lid for that thing. So you're going to see that lid and you're going to go, oh, that's right. That's only for Aaron to do. On top of that, it's a humongous bronze lid, so you're going to need help to get that thing off there. You're not going to get a priest to be an accomplice in your rebellion. So this, I think, would be a very good deterrence to anyone illegally burning incense in the future. And I don't know, maybe that was what turned on off to this whole thing. Just this idea of bronze being what the censers were made of, because verse 39, interestingly enough, tells us for the first time in this study what those censers were made out of, and that was brass, bronze. Now, if you have studied metals before from the scriptures, you know there's symbolism behind all the metals. In the outer courtyard, that station was all about judgment and sacrifice. So all of those furnishings, the brazen altar and the bronze laver, I cannot talk tonight, those were made of bronze because bronze symbolizes judgment. And that's in the station, the outer courtyard, the station of judgment. Now, everything else in the inner tabernacle structure, it was all made of solid gold. Well, gold. The Ark of the Covenant was wood covered in gold, but gold. Everything in the inner tabernacle structure was gold, and gold represents the kingly or divine metal. And I would think that it should have been enough to be handed a bronze censer. When Aaron burned incense in the inner tabernacle structure, what did he do it on? The altar of incense. It's also called the golden altar because it's made of gold. Burning incense was always done on gold. So when Moses starts passing out censers, I think I'd get mine and I'd say, wait a minute, is this brass? Not gold? You know what? I don't like the looks of this. I know what brass means. Brass means judgment. No, thank you. You can give my censer to someone else. Here, my dad will take it. I don't want it. But Again, nothing stopped these people. Verse 41. All right, what do you think is going to happen here? Have the people learned their lesson? Are they going to stop blaming Moses and start acknowledging that God is behind all of this? Are they going to start trusting their leaders? Verse 41. But on the next day, all the congregation of the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and against Aaron, saying, "You have killed the people of the Lord." Wow. Oy vey. These people had to be insufferable. I don't know how Moses and Aaron put up with them. Sorry to say, but some of them, dumber than a box of rocks, with hearts just as hard. And they're just not getting it. Now, again, verse 28, the whole point of this showdown was to serve as the most blatantly miraculous divine thing in the world to prove that this was God's doing, God's picking, God's choosing, nothing to do with Moses, nothing to do with Aaron, all the Lord. And their conclusion? This is Moses' fault. All those people that died, Moses did that. Moses killed them. And I'm like, I read that and I'm like, what? So Moses, you're telling me you believe Moses opened up the ground from the surface to Hades, and Moses threw down lightning bolts from heaven. Moses did all of this and killed all these people. You're telling me that's actually what you believe? It's like sometimes they don't want to give Moses any credit, and then at other times they give him credit he should not have. Yep, that was Moses. He opened up the ground, swallowed him alive. Moses sent down lightning bolts from heaven. I don't know how the Lord could have been any more clarifying with this. But their conclusion, Moses' fault. And I say, either way, whether they thought the Lord did this or whether they thought Moses did this, either way, they should probably stop giving Moses flack, shouldn't they? If the Lord did this, that means the Lord is backing Moses, which means you better too. But if Moses did this, then that means Moses is a god. That's even scarier. That's even more reason to capitulate, because Moses isn't going to be as merciful as the one true God. But no, they just keep going for the jugular with this poor guy, Moses. And we got to hurry here, but I just want to say, it's such a slap in the face to Moses and Aaron. Because if we're looking at this theoretically, if Moses and Aaron hadn't interceded for the people, they would all be toast. Every one of them would be dead. It was these two guys that they hate, Moses and Aaron, it was them interceding for the nation that spared the nation. So these two men that they just apparently can't stand, well, they're lucky that they had good hearts and interceded for them. Verse 42. And when the congregation had assembled against Moses and against Aaron, so here they come again. Let's take them down. And they turned toward the tent of meeting, and behold, the cloud covered it, and the glory of the Lord appeared. The Lord had to intervene again. You know, it's one of those, don't make me come down there. That's it. I'm coming down there again. Verse 43, and Moses and Aaron came to the front of the tent of meeting. Verse 24, and the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, verse 45, get away from the midst of this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment. See, Moses, I told you, you should have just let me do this yesterday. It would have saved me a trip. We're going to have to do it anyway. We're going to have to torch the whole nation. Reading on, and they fell on their faces. There's Moses and Aaron again, face plants before the Lord. Verse 46, and Moses said to Aaron, take your censer and put fire on it from off the altar, and lay incense on it, and carry it quickly to the congregation, and make atonement for them, For wrath has gone out from the Lord. The plague has begun. Again, real quickly, I want you to notice that Moses knows Exodus 30. Burning incense, Aaron's job. Moses may be the leader of the nation, but God has not authorized him to burn incense, so Moses won't touch a censer to burn incense. He gets that censer to Aaron because that's Aaron's job. And now the survival of the whole nation comes down to the intercession of the man that they wanted to oust, Aaron. And look at verse 47. Aaron ran to get this done. That is extremely commendable because I'll tell you what, Aaron could have taken his good old sweet time here. Like, wait a minute. You telling me the plague broke out? Yep. You telling me they're all going to die? Yep. You telling me that if I don't get out there and burn incense, they're all goners? Yep. Okay. I'll go. But I do have to stop at the market real quick. I just remembered the wife needs bread and eggs. And I probably should go pick up the kids first from school and mosey along. Take your time. But Aaron ran. He ran to do this, to intercede for the nation. If you ask me, I think it could be that Aaron understands just how easy it is to rebel against the Lord. Could it be that Aaron is thinking back just a few chapters ago? Chapter 12, that was Aaron. Chapter 12, this was Aaron rebelling against Moses and coming for the position of Moses. And I'll tell you what, we can't really be merciful and gracious to others until we have first experienced God's mercy and grace for ourselves. And that's what Aaron has experienced. Aaron came after Moses in chapter 12. Aaron could have been dead meat, but the Lord spared him. He had mercy on him. He showed his gracious favor on Aaron's life. And now Aaron is getting to take that right back, turn it around toward the people, and extend the mercy and grace of God from him to them. And he burns incense to intercede for the nation. Incense is the symbol of intercessory prayer, so a very proper picture here. What this plague is, we don't know, but it was loose in the camp. The plague had begun, verse 47. So Aaron took it as Moses said, and ran into the midst of the assembly, and behold, the plague had already begun among the people. And he put on the incense and made atonement for the people, verse 48, and he stood between the dead and the living, and the plague was stopped. Now, Aaron is serving as an intercessor, a type of Christ, and what a great way to put that. What a great way to define an intercessor. An intercessor is someone who stands between the living and the dead. Now get the picture here. You got people dying from this plague. You got living people beside them or near them. And in between them is Aaron burning incense. And it's like that incense is creating an impenetrable wall that sickness can't pass from the dead to the living. Was this something that the Lord called for? I don't know. I kind of feel like it's like a just a desperation attempt for Moses, because you're not going to look through the law if you're Moses and you're going to say, oh, yep, here's what the Lord said about this sort of thing. You burn incense. I don't see anywhere in the scriptures where incense creates atonement for people. Atonement happens at the brazen altar. I think this is Moses just like, well, we got to do something. Aaron, get out there with incense and let's see if the Lord won't forgive them. Let's see if we can't get between the death and the living and prevent this. And I feel like it's the Lord that just honored the attempt of Moses and Aaron to intercede. I feel like that's what's happening. I could be wrong, but I feel like that's what's happening. And so in the New Testament sense, you have Jesus Christ serving as the same thing for us. Who is it that keeps the pit from swallowing us whole? Who is it that prevents us from the fires of hell? Who is it that prevents the plague that would eternally damn our souls? That is Christ, who ever lives to intercede for us. Hebrews chapter 7, verses 23 through 25. Verse 49, now those who died in the plague were 14,700 besides those who died in the affair of Korah. Verse 50, and Aaron returned to Moses at the entrance of the tent of meeting. So Aaron had made his complete circuit through the camp, interceding for all of them. Reading on, when the plague was stopped. So just shy of 15,000 deaths because of this rebellion. Now here's some homework for you. Go home and read this. We're out of time. Hebrews chapter 3, verses 7 through 19. Go home and read that. It's about rebellion. Go home and read that. It's a great passage, and it goes hand in hand with what we're studying here in the book of Numbers. But let's stand and let's close in a word of prayer.